UAB Medcast is an ongoing medical education podcast. The UAB Division of Continuing Education designates that each episode of this enduring material is worth a maximum of 0.25 AMA PRA Category 1 credit. To collect credit, please visit uabmedicine.org/medcast and complete the episode's post-test.
Welcome to UAB Medcast, a continuing education podcast for medical professionals, bringing knowledge to your world. Here's Melanie Cole.
The human and financial costs of treating surgical site infections are increasing as the number of surgical procedures performed in the United States continues to rise. Today, we're talking about perioperative glucose management and surgical site infections. My guest is Dr. Jeff Dobbins. He's an associate professor and an anesthesiologist at UAB Medicine. Dr. Dobbins, tell us, let's just start with the most important risk factor for surgical site infections that you see.
Well, there are a lot of risk factors for surgical site infections, and one of the main ones that we see is uncontrolled glucose in the perioperative period, or the time period that is kind of running up towards the patient having surgery. Like I said, it's not the only determinant of surgical site infections, but it is one of the major ones.
Then tell us a little bit about the metabolic responses to anesthesia and surgery. What's going on in the patient's metabolism while they're under anesthetic?
The perioperative period, which encompasses the pre-op, the interoperative, and the postoperative time periods, generally is associated with a heightened metabolic response. The patients generally will tend to run a little bit of a higher glucose tolerance. It's just that increased stress response from surgery. So their sugars are usually going to be a little bit higher in that time period, and it actually predisposes them to surgical site infections.
Well, then tell us, since diabetes is one of the leading causes, as you've said, and of hyperglycemia in the perioperative setting, tell us some of the measures that can be taken to reduce surgical site infections in the diabetic patient.
Well, what we do before the patient comes to surgery is they have an appointment with the preoperative anesthesia assessment consultation and treatment clinic, or the PACT. And at that point, we do a risk stratification and we will check the patient's hemoglobin A1C, which gives us an idea of what their blood glucose control has been like for the previous 3 months. And then we'll also check and see what their sugar is at that time of the appointment, and that gives us an idea of what their short-term control is. So we kind of look at the two together and see and get an idea of how this patient's overall blood sugar control is. For example, if the hemoglobin A1C is greater than 8%, that generally corresponds to an increased risk of surgical site infections. If their blood sugar, though, that day is maybe 180 or 200, perhaps they've made some changes to their medications or they've started on a new medication or something like that. And so their short-term control is a little bit more predictive of the surgical site infection for the perioperative area. Where the hemoglobin A1C comes in is if the patient has, say, a knee implant or a pacemaker or something like that, you don't want to have good control right around the time of surgery, and then after you're discharged, you end up go back to the ways of having poor control, and then you have develop an infection. We will usually identify that elevated A1C and send it off a notification to the surgeon that says, you know, do you want us to refer this patient back to their primary care for greater glucose management, or is this a surgical case that has to proceed, such as cancer or something like that? And then in that case, we will, the anesthesia team will aggressively manage the blood sugars with insulin infusions and things like that during the surgery and afterwards.
So what are the recommended target blood glucose levels? And this is more for critically ill patients, or as you said, someone with cancer where surgery is you know, a much more important situation. And then when you tell us those target levels, are these used across the board, maybe for someone who is less ill? Is it truly then as important?
Well, we tend to go by the Society of Thoracic Surgeons guidelines, which generally target about a blood sugar between about 70 and 180. And that's measured milligrams per deciliter. Above that, you start having an increase in the likelihood of developing a surgical site infection. That's actually kind of a wide gap, 70 to 180. And you also don't want to make the patient hypoglycemic, because then that's also associated with increased morbidity and mortality. So we kind of try to err on keeping the blood sugar less than 180, with the realization that some surgical procedures will require it a little bit more tight control of that. But generally less than 180 is considered a normal value for the perioperative control.
Have recent studies or your outcomes shown a significant benefit of intensive insulin therapy for the management in perioperative hyperglycemia? What have your outcomes looked like when you're following these protocols?
Well, when you say intensive hyperglycemic management, that tends to correspond to trying to drive the blood glucose levels down to about 110. And there have been some studies that have said that that might not be the best idea, because of some increased morbidity and mortality that you can get if the blood sugar then rebounds and gets too low. So that's why we kind of tend to keep them a little bit on the higher side, towards the 180 range. In terms of what our outcomes have shown, this has actually been an initiative which we've had in place since December of 2018. And just kind of unofficially looking at some of the infection data, we have seen a reduction in our superficial incisional infections and also in the organ and joint space infections.
So then tell us some of the things that hospitals are doing to prevent surgical site infections in general, and what would you like patients to do? Their providers can help counsel them before they know they're going into surgery. Is there some things that they can be doing preemptively?
And in looking at a lot of the different risk factors for surgical site infections, there's a lot that patients can do for themselves that kind of takes ownership of the whole prevention methodology. For instance, in addition to uncontrolled blood glucose levels for surgical site infections, current smokers, patients who are malnourished, obese patients, patients who are hypertensive, for instance, these are all factors that contribute to developing surgical site infections. And so if the patients and their primary care physicians realize prior to the surgery that, hey, you know, we need to talk about smoking cessation, we need to, you know, work on getting your diet improved, we need to get you to lose some weight, some things like that, those are all things which will contribute to controlling these surgical site infections and really help patients to do better in the long run. A lot of times what the patients don't realize is that if they do get a surgical site infection, it's very debilitating afterwards. And you could be looking at a year, maybe even longer, on disability or needing additional surgeries or in a wheelchair if it's a knee or a hip replacement that gets infected. So it really behooves patients and their primary care providers, you know, to be aggressive at trying to mitigate as many of these risk factors as what we can.
That's great information. So important for other providers to hear. Dr. Dobbins, as we wrap up, what would you like other providers to know about the importance of diabetic complications and perioperative management considerations and surgical site infections?
I think that just about all of our primary care providers at UAB and in the community are well aware of a lot of the complications from diabetes. But the whole surgical environment, when you add on that increased level of surgical stress and metabolic stress and things like that, it really does cause complications on, you know, the after side of surgery. For instance, they have a greater likelihood of being admitted to the intensive care unit. They have a greater likelihood of staying in the hospital longer and having reoperations. And all of these contribute to just excessive use of healthcare resources, which, as you know, are limited. And the more that we can prevent in terms of excess hospital stays and infections and things like that, the less healthcare resources are used for that, and they can be used for other things.
Well, that's certainly true. What a great point. Thank you so much, Dr. Dobbins, for coming on and sharing your expertise with us today. A community physician can refer a patient to UAB Medicine by calling the MIST line at 1-800-UAB-MIST. That wraps up this episode of UAB Medcast. For more information on resources available at UAB Medicine, head on over to our website at uabmedicine.org/physician. If, as a provider, you found this podcast informative, please share with other providers and share on your social media, and be sure to check out all the other interesting podcasts in our library. Until next time, this is Melanie Cole.